as people go through life, they're in that space where they might create a business or they might create a nonprofit. Over time, they will find something that they say, hey, you know, there's a need and it bothers me that it's not being filled and I'm going to do this.
Hello and welcome to the Innovative Mindset Podcast. I'm your host, Isolde Trachtenberg. On the show, I interview peak performing innovators in the creative, social impact, and earth conservation spaces. I also bring you ideas and techniques that you can grab and use to set goals, create, and unlock your potential for changing yourself and the world. And now let's get to the show. Hey there, and welcome to the Innovative Mindset Podcast. I'm your host, Isolde Trachtenberg. Super, super happy that you are taking the time to be here with me today. Something just fell. My cats are being recalcitrant, but always messmakers. I am really honored to have today's guest on the show. Christian Lafer empowers others to be the change they want to see at his company, Instant Nonprofit. I'm so excited to talk about this topic. He believes you can sign up and turn your nonprofit idea into a tax-exempt 501c3 in an hour or less, minus IRS or lawyer calls, so you can focus on your mission. How cool is that? A decade ago, he volunteered to start a nonprofit with some friends, thinking, how hard can it be? He became morally outraged at the brain-numbing application process, the one-year-plus approval timeline, and the lawyer fees. When he didn't hear back from his assigned agent, he dialed 30-plus similar extensions, changing the last few numbers in IRS-exempt organizations, grilling agents, and formulating a love letter to a bureaucrat. The perfect 501c3 application. He got approval in under 60 days and went from blogger to businessman. Today, with an efficient, high-tech-enabled process, a 100% IRS approval guarantee, and a staff who believes it shouldn't be hard to do good, his company is the fast, easy, and number one most highly rated 501c3 service in the niche. Wow, Christian, I'm so excited to have you on the show. Welcome.
Thank you. It's exciting to be here, Isolde.
I am, first of all, I'm thrilled because I am one of those people who thought about starting a nonprofit and went, oh, this is just entirely too much for me. And I stepped away from it. So I'm really excited to talk to you about how to do that and how you went, like you said, blogger to businessman, but also, and this is a tired phrase, but heart-centered. You seem like you are very much in that space of doing the right thing for the right reasons is the thing to do.
Yeah. I sort of fell into this, when I was 8 years old. My mom had taken my little sister, who was almost four, taken her to the doctor because she was nonverbal at three and a half. And what they had discovered was, even though there were no physical abnormalities and she just looked like all the other kids, she was, you know, special. And what we called, then mentally retarded, now developmentally disabled, but regardless of the label, she would always be the most awesome human in my life, teaching me to be a better human at all times. If you throw the ball back to my sister or, you know, take her to the park, you've got a friend for life.
I love it.
But what that meant was I grew up around organizations like Special Olympics and other amazing people who just wanted to help kids do, you know, be their best. And so fast forward to around 2010, when I went to start this nonprofit, I just became morally outraged that it would be so hard to do good compared to starting any other type of business. It's way more difficult. Mm-hmm. And that moral outrage led me down a path. You know, I'm the last guy in the world who, if you could have asked me, that who would start an organization, a company that helps people with bureaucratic paperwork. I hate bureaucratic paperwork, but that's why I was the best one to solve it. So I'm at the epicenter of all this wonderfully good energy with good people trying to do good things and not necessarily having the skill sets to do all of those things, and especially to wade through something they're only going to do once that they don't need to become an expert at. I want them to be able to focus on the mission so they can go do things like help kids like my sister.
I love that. And I'm so grateful that you explained all of that. And here's the question The question for me is, you said that it's harder to start a nonprofit versus some other kind of business. And I love that you could call nonprofit a business, but what is the difference? What is the difference between a nonprofit, a not-for-profit, and a for-profit business?
Well, I can only do one, you know, major lift at a time. So someday would I love to be the person who helps the nation, the world, call the nonprofit the for purpose instead? Yes, I would. But for now, we're stuck with the term nonprofit. And when you start a nonprofit, that means you're starting, generally people use that term interchangeably, with 501c3 tax exempt status. Mm-hmm. So the, you know, in the US, of course, you start a business, you get the charter for the corporate entity, the corporation, at the state level. And then in this case, you get a special tax exempt status from the federal government. That can also go back and be applied later to the state to absolve the organization of sales tax and other types of taxes at the state level too. But what this primarily means, this 501c3 piece, is that you are not, there's two primary things that are the reasons people want to do this from sort of a business perspective or a service perspective. The 501c3 gives them no corporate taxation. So if you pile up money in the organization or you bring in income and you have some left over, it's not called profit. it's called net, right? But it is not taxed like every other corporation has a tax on their corporate profit, what's left over. The other primary financial reason that this is advantageous is people get a tax deduction. So if you make $100,000 a year and you donate 15 of it to a charity, a 501c3, your top line of tax when you complete your tax form will become $85,000, right? That might even knock you down a tax bracket and have you taxed at a lower tax basis. So some people actually use this strategically in their wealth management, in their life planning. Well, those designations take additional work. You have to apply to the IRS. You have to meet certain criteria to be able to get that tax exempt status. So there are a number of additional processes that we go through. There are 26 discrete processes we go through with our done-for-you 501c3 formation service at instantnonprofit.com. And a lot of it surrounds getting, you know, qualifying for that tax-exempt status.
Oh, you lost me a while back. there's so much that you have to do. And I'm so glad that you're there providing the service to do it, which I think is really cool. But in as I was listening to you, I'm going, boy, you really have to believe in what you're trying to do to go through all of this, right? If I want to start a for-profit corporation, I fill out some paperwork, I pay them my $200, and I'm ready to go. But if I want to start a nonprofit, there's so much else. And I'm going to ask you in a minute to detail the different parts that you had. Like, I know you need a board of directors and you need all of this stuff. But it seems like it takes a special kind of person who, A, believes in what they're doing, and B, is, and again, I hate to use the buzzword mission-driven, but it is that you have to believe in what you're trying to do in order to stick it out. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, my thoughts on that are that it's really no more... that's no more at play than in any endeavor in life in starting something, right? If you start your own business, which millions of people do every year, it's no different than starting a nonprofit. Yes, there are some additional hurdles with the 501c3 nonprofit. And yes, in the past, you probably had to have some additional drive and, you know, remembering your purpose and persevering through those things was a lot more difficult. But just like early on, you were one of the few who maybe had a mechanical buggy instead of a horse and carriage. We've taken starting a 501c3 from having to plow through all of these things yourself, get stuck, get delayed, get rejected, et cetera, or pay thousands and thousands of dollars to an attorney who probably also doesn't do this every day and would run into delays and a really clunky process, et cetera. And we've democratized this entire process so that you can stay focused on your mission, on board with us, go through a very simple process that is as easy or easier than starting even just a basic LLC, like you said, that you can do in 20 minutes and for $200. And we do all of that work for you so that you can go focus on the mission, reach out and get volunteers, raise money, and help the people or the environment or whatever your purpose is, and stay focused on that. So that's why I'm excited to come to work every day, because we're about plowing down those barriers to making a purpose-driven life the center of what you do. And God, haven't we seen so much of this reevaluation of values and versus your daily activities in the pandemic? That's what the Great Resignation is really all about, I believe.
Yeah, I can see exactly what you're saying, especially about the Great Resignation. And I'm going to just keep going. Yes, yes, yes. I don't want to be a yes person for you. I want to ask substantive questions, but I'm agreeing with everything you're saying. It is interesting to me, though, that we go through these evaluative processes in our own minds, in our own hearts, to figure out, you know, how can I do things differently? And what is it? What is my purpose? And how do I fulfill it? And so when you go, you know what, my purpose, of course, is to help the earth and the animals. And so I'm going, okay, how do I do that? What are the best ways for me to do that? And okay, let's say I decide I want to start a nonprofit. How do I know how to phrase all of that? Like, what do you need to say if you decide you want to start a nonprofit? What do you need to say to make sure that what your mission is, what you want to do, is what you fill out the paperwork for? How do you translate that into language that somebody like the IRS or whoever else has to do the approving will understand and approve?
Well, I love what you're about. I love that you are so purpose-driven and you have these incredible interests, from, you know, kind of rocket science-y kind of things to marketing but you have that purpose at the core of what you're about. And I think we all have these things where, you know, we do a certain thing and then we do this other thing, right, that brings us joy. And if we can bring them together somehow, that's a wonderful thing. And I think you've done that with your podcast, so kudos to you. This is just like any endeavor where, you know, if anyone wants to start a website or even just a blog, just their personal, you know, rant page, you really have to think carefully, a little bit more carefully, about how you're packaging that message. What is the message? Because if you just blather on and on, nobody will really understand what you're talking about. They'll get bored, they'll go away. And so we have a set of processes at Instant Nonprofit to help people get this big, massive vision that they might not have completely crystallized in their mind down to first a one sentence mission statement. And so we help them, you know, the classic problem of a newspaper editor, right? How do they take this big article about this esoteric topic and boil it down to a headline that'll make people want to read? And so one of the first things we do is we help our customers create their one sentence mission statement. So ours might be, as an example, you know, it's we help blank, right? The people that we're helping or the environment, in fill in the blank, by performing or providing blank. What do we do to make this happen so that we achieve this result, right? Kind of X, Y, and Z. Mm-hmm. So with our company, my company, it would be, we help would-be nonprofit founders to create their nonprofit effortlessly so they can focus on their mission and make a huge impact in the world. And so that one sentence mission statement is great, because when we equip our customers with that, it not only helps us to start the government application process on a good foot and make this really simple for any bureaucratic processors who might be looking at it, but it's a weapon for the customer. It's a little tool in their pocket, because if someone has a minute to ask you about your 501c3 or your business or your podcast or anything, and you have that killer one sentence mission statement, then you've turned the transaction, if you will, around. Instead of you blathering on for 10 minutes and losing the person, if you deliver that killer one sentence mission statement and then be quiet, which is very hard when we're talking about things we're passionate about, then you would immediately capture their attention, and they would ask you the next question, which would be, oh my gosh, that sounds amazing. How do you do that? And right there, you now have a relationship instead of a one-way stream of consciousness.
Okay. I'm taking a second to take all of that in. I love that the mission statement is so important, because it is. And as a writer, that's something that's crucial, right? Being able to distill. And yet in your own mind, what if you're not ready, right? What if you are still trying to grapple with exactly, like, you know, you want to help, but maybe your psyche or your heart isn't quite set. Like you said, in the Great Resignation, over the last couple of years, people went, oh, you know what? I haven't been happy, and I'm going to change things. And I think that's great. So many of us have made that decision. But still, what if you know that, but you're not ready? Do you have any thoughts or ideas for someone who wants to, before they're ready to call you and go, okay, I'm ready to start my nonprofit? Do you have any thoughts of what someone who is in that, I don't know, I want to help, but I don't know how place, what they can do to narrow things down?
Oh, there are some really neat things people can do. And one of the things that I've learned over time and, you know, I've been through hardship, you know, self-created hardship. We've all, right, got these lessons that we learn in life. And one of the main things that I've learned that has really helped me in business and in my relationships and with my kids is to manage my own emotional energy. And sometimes we put these big things in front of us, we go, oh my gosh, you know, this sounds really difficult and complex, and how am I going to do this? And we almost create our own barriers. And so if we can manage our own state by breaking things down into simpler questions we can ask ourselves, and that's what we do. And we have a nonprofit boot camp, and we help people kind of flesh out their ideas through that boot camp. And one of the things you can do is say, well, I want to make an impact. I want to lead a more purpose-driven life. If you close your eyes and just picture maybe 3 or 5 times that you've experienced true joy in your life, what was like a great time that you had where you were pleasantly surprised with your own experience? And a lot of times what that will evoke in people is the time that they truly helped someone, or they went on a trip and they did a building project, or they created something that was a gift to someone else, or solved a problem. Maybe they, who knows, you know, even something as grinding as fighting with the IRS so that you could get your friend's nonprofit started, right? That was my kind of thing that I went back and said, okay, when did I really feel victorious or joyful? And if you've got a handful of those things, they're probably in acts of service often. And then that can help you derive maybe a direction to go in to pursue a life of meaning. And you don't need to just leap from whatever you're doing full time into this. You can launch a nonprofit that is something that you do occasionally. You go out and see if you can get some friends to join you and get some reps in to perform this thing that you enjoy, and just see if it works out.
I'm taking a second. That's a lot. Okay. So, I don't call this dead air, by the way. I call it anticipating air or anticipatory air, because there's something here for me that I'm hearing what you're saying, and I'm kind of going, as you do this, as you decide, you know, when was I really happy? When were things really felt really good and joyful? There is a, I don't know if you know, if you're familiar with the concept of ikigai, which is, you know, basically what you love to do, what you're good at, what the world needs, and what they're willing to pay you for, that the intersection of that is your purpose. And what if what you really have been joyful about, what has really been something that has felt like it gave your life meaning, isn't something the world wants, or isn't something that people are willing to fundraise for or pay you for? What do you do then?
Well, I would say the first thing to pay attention to. We often force ourselves into things through, you know, expectations, or I should do something, you know, and I just like to relieve myself of those burdens by, if it's something that gives you joy, and whether or not it's something that, you know, has a sustainable business model, which is really what you're talking about behind it, that ikigai is the intersection of passion and a model that is, you know, probably economically sustainable. I say, do the thing that brings you joy anyway, even if that's walking through the forest and talking nicely to the trees. No one's going to give you money for that. But if that brings you joy, by all means, you know, it's really important, especially in these times, to find those outlets, because the dopamine extraction machine is trying to distract you from those things. However, as people go through life, they usually do find something that, especially if they're in that frame and they're in that space where they might create a business or they might create a nonprofit, over time, they will find something that they say, hey, you know, there's a need and it bothers me that it's not being filled, and I'm going to do this. Whether that's creating a network through a Facebook group to help foster animals who need homes, which is a huge model now, right? It's not just the Dumb Friends League anymore. People are just opening their home to a few dogs, and then they have, you know, a little party at their house with some coffee and cake and whatever. And they invite people to just pet the dogs, and then the dogs have the dogs go home. No money was spent. There isn't necessarily a huge business model, but that is how a lot of specialty adoption organizations have come about over the past number of years, because the internet is allowing people to network. And so if I love Great Danes, there is definitely a Great Dane foster rescue around me that couldn't have existed prior to the internet. Well, that would just be fun to do. You get to have a party, you get to have some coffee and cake, and you get to play with dogs. I can't think of anything better. And so you can back into something without having to worry about whether it's going to be a great business model, if it is something that brings you joy to do.
Absolutely. And that notion of, oh, I'm doing it because I love it and it brings me joy and all of that other stuff. I'm going to give you a personal example. I get asked to do a lot of speaking on behalf of the earth or on behalf of animals at different meetings and organizations. And I am the queen of being asked, oh, but we know how much you want to save the earth, so we're sure you're going to want to do this for free, right? You're going to want to pay your plane ticket, pay your hotel, and we're not going to pay you. Everybody else is getting paid, but we're not going to pay you. So come and do this speech, this keynote, but you're not going to get paid. If I had a nonprofit, maybe I could do that. But otherwise, you know what they say, exposure can kill you. So what does someone do in that situation, right? There's this myth that if you have a nonprofit, even that you don't get paid, that it's something you do because you love it, not because you're necessarily interested in getting paid for it. What do you do to dispel that? And is it true? Maybe it is true. Maybe you should always sort of expect that you're not going to make enough money to quite support yourself if you have a nonprofit. What are your thoughts on that?
You know, after doing about probably 6,000 discovery calls, right? Strategy calls with people who are thinking about starting a nonprofit, I just haven't run into that problem terribly often. People who call us don't always necessarily know exactly where their mission focus might be. They usually have two or three, if they're not sure, right? But what they're doing is they're exploring this, and there is, you know, the mind is a powerful thing, and generally it finds a way to do something that is of meaning, and there is demand for it and everything. So I just haven't really seen this being too much of a problem with people who are purpose driven, you know, like yourself. I mean, you've mentioned a few of the causes that you believe in, and there are billions of dollars behind, behind environmental and animal causes, right? Every different strain, every different breed, every different problem you could run into, different types of illnesses or issues that animals suffer from, and pairing, you know, pairing certain types of people, soldiers with PTSD or seniors who live alone. They're all opportunities to find a niche that you can serve. And again, I just haven't run into that being a terrible issue, because people are so, their creativity is so powerful in being able to synthesize these things.
And even so, like, which I think is great. And I have talked myself to people who are like, but if you, my best friend cautioned me against starting a nonprofit. She said, you know, it's really hard and you have to work your patootie off to get funding, and you have to be audited. And there are all of these different steps that you have. And for me, for someone who's like, I want to be boots on the ground doing the things, that becomes something that's challenging. And I know other people who've had similar kinds of challenges, that the amount of work it's going to take to maintain a nonprofit will debilitate you, so that you're not so much able to do the things that the nonprofit is supposed to be doing.
Oh, I'm so glad you brought that up. There are so many myths and misconceptions about what it takes to maintain a nonprofit. And this industry, the nonprofit industry, if you will, right? Attorneys, accountants, service providers who focus in this area, there is sort of a self-interest in making things sound very complicated. Things like conflict of interest. Oh, if you are on the board, if you're a director, if you're the founder, you can't be paid as a staff member, right? That's preposterous. You're the best person to be paid as the executive director, because you're probably also the chief bottle washer and garbage person and bookkeeper as well. So if it can be, if you can hire off the street for it, you can be paid for it by your own nonprofit. Same thing with fundraising. There are billions of dollars out there. There are $4.3 trillion under assets under management in the nonprofit space. And just private money alone exceeds $250 billion per year, not including a massive amount of government spending, where they devolve the government work to local charities to get on boots on the ground, as you called it, in neighborhoods. So there's tons of funding out there. It's not that hard to raise. There's just a process behind it, just like anything. Starting a business is not easy, and this is not easy either, but it can be made much simpler and much easier by taking it one step at a time and iterating your way to glory, as I like to call it, which is all we do in our lives anyway, isn't it? We're constantly building a better life for ourselves, our children, our family, our communities, and we're figuring out how to do that as we go along. And if we worry about every single thing we're ever going to have to do in that process, nobody would ever have a baby, nobody would ever start a business, and nobody would even consider driving a car, because eventually somebody's going to back into you. And if you had to think about every last detail of insurance and all of those other things that come with driving a car, having a baby, starting business, or starting a nonprofit, there would not be much getting done in the world. So again, my job at Instant Nonprofit is to lower or reduce or eliminate those concerns. So we have things like how to run your board meeting in 30 minutes or less with a video training and a 9-step agenda. The board meetings alone can cause people to have, you know, a hemorrhage. It's brain damaging to think about all of the different complexities, especially most people have never run a board meeting on their own. But with our training, we've turned something extremely complex, time consuming, and it just doesn't make you feel very smart when you don't know how to do something. And we've turned this into something that makes a person look and feel like a genius, because they simply adopted our training and pressed play and pause on our little video. That, now that that steps out of the way, let's move on to your mission statement. Let's move on to how you can raise that seed money from your own Rolodex without feeling like you're selling. Those tend to be these big things that if we can move those out of your way and kind of flatten down every speed bump that 90% plus of founders are going to run into, then they can, in fact, make a huge difference in the lives of others.
That's terrific. I feel like I'm going, but what about this? But what abouting you? We're like, okay, great, Robert's Rules of Order is a thing, and we're supposed to know how to do all of this stuff. It seems, I worked at NASA for many years, and the bureaucracy killed me. That's one of the big reasons I left. It seems to me that there is a morass to navigate when you're doing this. And I keep coming back to, A, you need to believe in your mission enough to want to do that, to be willing to do that. But B, how do you make that easier? How do you make it easier to, you know, you help people set up a nonprofit? That's great. But what about next year and the year after that, when they're facing these challenges that they don't know how to face? What does someone do when they've already started the nonprofit and then they are about to be audited or whatever that thing is that comes up that's a challenge? Where are the resources for that? What would someone do? What would your advice be?
Well, at the risk of sounding like a commercial, which I don't want to do that. I want to have some, you know, amazing conversations here. However, we do have something called Nonprofit Autopilot, and we do all of the filings year over year. Uh-huh. We train and give support year over year so that nonprofit founders can, again, stay focused on their mission. When they have a question, they can submit it. Or if they have a filing due, they don't even need to worry about when the deadline is because we handle that for them. But I'm so glad you brought up your tenure at NASA, because Elon Musk has shown that sticking with first principles and drawing a straight line from A to B is the way to solve incredibly, seemingly intractable problems in the most simple, straightforward way possible. I mean, think about the preposterous idea of using stainless steel for the skin of the rocket, or any of the other amazing innovations that they've created. A reusable rocket that lands on a mobile landing pad out in the ocean. This is the stuff of science fiction, but we're actually watching this happen because one person decided that he was going to go reconsider without the baggage of history, without learning about how hard it is for everyone else or what other people have run into. Elon Musk has taken, in a number of industries, one simple way of thinking called first principles and applied it to rockets and applied it to boring tunnels to solve traffic issues and electric vehicles. And that is exactly what we've done at Instant Nonprofit with this incredibly, yes, complex 501c3 formation process. And that's why our customers are exceedingly happy. And over 4,000 of them almost at this point, we're just knocking on the door, 4,000 charities doing amazing things all over the world. We have one person after another coming to us saying, thank God I found you because I almost gave up on my dream and you made this possible. And so I love to hear that. And this is driven by a mission like Elon Musk's mission to go to Mars. He might be crazy in that, but he has this overriding mission that helped him blast through and get his team to blast through every single barrier to some incredibly complex things. And that's why he's one of my favorite humans.
See, here's the thing though, right? When you're doing that, when you have this notion of first principles, you have to let a lot of other things go, right? You can't hold on to when he's talking about, and this is, you know, I used to love Elon Musk and I don't love him so much anymore because he doesn't seem to care too much about the environment around the boring of the tunnels. He doesn't seem to care too much about the animals that are harmed as he's developing his innovations. So what about someone who is, who may have the right path, but along that path, there's a lot of collateral damage? What kind of mindset do you think needs to have a shift in order for both of those things to coexist? And can they?
That's not for me to judge. Everyone has to follow their own path. I believe that, this show is not the Elon Musk show, but there's an argument that says EVs are the solution to, and I'm not sure they are the solution to people's need to get around and not use internal combustion engines. I'm not getting into that debate, but there's arguments that say that that is much more environmentally friendly mm-hmm. than ICE. Regardless of that, the innovations and the reason that Elon Musk is one of my favorite humans is because he didn't allow that history. He didn't allow the naysayers or what other people failed at to stop him in any of these domains. And that's important for each of us in our own lives. There is a way to do what you want to do, to align your heart and your life with in a purpose with a business model so that you can get out of, you know, maybe a job that you don't like, or, you know, not feeling aligned with your daily activities, with your purpose, and find a way to get to that purpose in using first principles. So yes, we're always going to consider, and we have to make those decisions internally in ourselves. Am I doing something in a way that is ethical and is consistent with my own values? But if we can't trust other people, we have to be able to trust each other to be out for the common good and out for each other, because otherwise we have, you know, there's freedom and there's tyranny. There's freedom and there's command and control economy, command and control thought processes. And I am not a fan of cancel culture. I am not a fan of limiting people's ability to access information and make their own decisions, because I believe that that is what has produced, yes, a very flawed, but the greatest nation, the most innovation, the most equity, the most egalitarianism in the world. And that's with the United States and its devolved decision-making down to the individual with reasonable side guards for, you know, excesses. And I think that that's kind of a, you know, a representation of what goes on in each of our hearts. We're all making the best decisions that we can for ourselves. We're considering the impact on others. And especially with something like bureaucratic paperwork, which really is a zero value effort. Heck, we save a lot of trees from being killed with needless paperwork being printed and discarded because of mistakes. So there are all kinds of ways to look at any endeavor and really to consider whether it matches our values or not.
For sure. It's the thing that I'm curious about is this notion of, you know, if you're trying to do the right thing, whatever that right thing is for each individual person, because your point is well taken. If you're trying to do the right thing and you're going, okay, first principle, this is it. This is the eyes on the prize kind of way of looking at things. When you're trying to do this in a not-for-profit way, you have a lot of eyes on you, and you have a board to satisfy, and you have all of these different things to do. And some of that has to be internal. Like you said, you have to follow your heart. But some of it is, there are people who are going to be judging you. Some of, you know, J.K. Rowling is a person, and I agree with you about cancel culture. It's not a good thing. It's reactionary, and I don't care for it. Elon Musk is the same. He's out there in that way. And I'm not bashing Elon Musk. I'm just saying I don't like some of the ways he does business. But we still have people to answer to, right? You have your own heart, which is great. But if you have a nonprofit, you also have a board to answer to, and also your donors. So there's this ripple effect of what are you trying to do in conjunction with the mindset of the people you're either doing it for, or you're doing it because of their donations. How do you align those when you are developing your nonprofit so that you will be able to follow that ethical path?
That's all part of, you know, growth and discovery and openness and really becoming a fully formed human by examining your own motives, examining the results of what you're bringing about. And I'll give you a great example that I completely agree with you. There are many organizations that help bring clothing or provide free clothing and shoes, you know, in other countries. Mm-hmm. I have recently read articles about the environmental destruction wrought by making things cheaper free to people, right? There are some negative impacts to that. Mm-hmm. Things become cheap, they become throwaway, they become damaging to the environment. So there are side effects to being human. And some of them are unfortunate side effects. And mm-hmm. So this is just about a process of reexamining the results in your life and the results of your work and your efforts, and retooling and reconfiguring it as you go. And it's true of just existing. You can't leave the front door without some environmental damage. You're stepping on grass, you're stepping on ants, you know, and I'm not trivializing those things. These are considerations in any endeavor. So not what I'd like to do in the conversation is to remove any difference between starting a nonprofit, doing something that's cause or heart-based, and starting any business or any endeavor. There is fallout of every kind. People say homeschooling is undermining public schooling. Well, that's a fact. There is an argument for or against anything. And again, you're not answering to anyone in a nonprofit any different than you are in any other endeavor, because you have to answer to the environmental impact, the impact on people, et cetera. And sometimes look at some of the greatest, quote, innovations in the world that have turned out to be horribly destructive or damaging to some greater values. There are always going to be these situations. Nonprofits are not any different than any other one.
Mm. It's interesting how what you're saying is normalizing in my mind that those differences actually align in some ways really well. And yet so much is going on in the world right now where we are divided, we are having these issues, and there's a lot of trauma, right? So people are starting, like you said, they want to help, and they're doing what they can, from dog rescues to sending clothes to all of that. Is that a trauma response, do you think? Or do you think that these people have that mindset to begin with?
What I would say is that, as we've seen in the movie The Social Dilemma, have you seen that one?
Mm-hmm.
There are interests out there in the world. And, you know, I call it the dopamine extraction industry. That has existed probably since the beginning of time, when anyone wanted to influence anyone else to do something that serves them.
Mm-hmm.
So this in the movie The Social Dilemma, you know, the premise or the conclusion is that 55 engineers at some of these big social tech companies have been creating algorithms that are designed to keep us addicted to them and drive us to our base instincts, right? To battle and to need to win over the other person and stay entrenched in our own ways of thinking. And those interests are directly opposing to becoming what I call a fully formed human, someone who can reevaluate their own conclusions and biases and all of those things. So I do believe that there is there's been an acceleration of, once the black box of the dopamine response, right, the neurochemical response, and how to trigger this in people as a study and as a discipline, that is being exploited by certain, you know, interests. And so it's our job to be aware of these things and to, you know, live a life that awareness can help us to become free of these things. Has there been a tendency to, you know, find differences or, you know, have these battles, have these things keeping us from becoming our greatest selves? War has always existed. Jealousy and all of those base instincts, the seven deadly sins, whatever you want to call it, going back to even ancient times where people would attribute these things to spirits and gods and all kinds of battles going on in the ether. These have always existed. They always will exist. We now live in a world where these are engineered, but it is up to, again, it's more important than ever that the individual is able to do some self-examination and live according to their values and make sure they're not getting sucked into that dopamine extraction machine, like so many of us have been.
For sure. And I love that you said that, you know, we can self-evaluate and self-assess and choose not to participate in, I love this, the dopamine extraction machine. And yet we all have trauma, right? We all have something in our lives that we're dealing with or healing or trying to work through or overcome. I was wondering if you wouldn't mind sharing how that happened for you. And I know it's kind of an intimate question, but to me, going from where you were with your sister to being so purpose-driven to helping other people help others, if you will, I would love to know what happened that you made this transformation to become this very self-assessing and also purpose-driven person.
Well, like, if you're familiar with Joseph Campbell's hero's journey model, you know, Joseph Campbell was a professor in the 1960s, and he identified that there's a certain trajectory of all great epic stories. And even in across cultures across the world, even those who couldn't have possibly communicated with each other. And his conclusion is that humans have this archetype that and this cycle that we go through in becoming who we are. And so early on in childhood, right, that experience with my sister also got me into my first fist fight in third grade in elementary school. That was in the 70s, and they were mainstreaming the special kids into mainstream schools instead of having them in institutions, which is ultimately, I think, a good thing. Mm-hmm. And as this was happening, I remember I was walking through the hall and some kids, you know, normal quote kids, were making fun of the special kids in the hall as they went by. And I, you know, not sure what happened next, but I ended up in the principal's office and I refused to apologize. And I think that was because I recognized that I was protecting in proxy my little sister. Mm. And so it made me someone who has always been wanting to fight for the underdog and help those, you know, less fortunate or less able to defend themselves. Now, whether for good or better or worse, that it's, you know, by, you know, punching a kid in the face in third grade, right? It's the motive might be good, and sometimes the avenue one takes to enact that is not, right? But the point is, those are the kinds of things that all of us have in our background that cause us to go work at NASA or cause us to go work in the nonprofit industry, helping the little guy against the ivory towers of the IRS or the government or whatever. So, you know, those are really fond memories of mine. And I could have looked at and then probably did look at that as, oh, you know, I could be a kid in trouble or I could, you know, this could be negative. But ultimately, we have to find the beauty and the nobility in the things that we do and the reasons we do them and simply choose to find better paths to enact that beautiful future we all envision in our hearts. And so I think that's kind of how people arrive at what they do. And that's something I always give people the benefit of the doubt, is that we're all evolving. We're all working on how to overcome that trauma and to direct that trauma into something positive instead of negative. Right. I was a foster parent. I adopted my daughter out of foster care. And there was a saying in foster care, hurt people hurt people. Mm-hmm. And so I like to say hurt people, then they help people, because they can relate to the people who need the help. And so I think that's a great way to start to wind up the conversation and just look for ways to redirect the energy that we have about wanting to change something and this has to stop, or maybe some of that maybe dark energy, and produce something that's wonderful out of that. Because the idea to make change, you know, you have to break a few eggs to make an omelet sometimes. You're going to go against the norm. You might cut against the grain in creating a new solution. That pretty much is a requirement. But if we can do that with a sense of purpose and with a sense of that context, and that's why I love to bring up that hero's journey model, it helps you put context around that journey that we all have when we go from discovery and dissatisfaction discovery and exploration, transformation, and then bringing that transformational information or the new future and articulating that to the village as we return to the Shire triumphant over the evil coming out of the fires of Mordor. And that might sound very woo-woo or very lofty, but we're all playing that story out in our own lives. So I just like to look at these kinds of things and help people put their own context and their own lives around whatever it is they're doing. And wherever you are in your journey, that's a beautiful thing. And if you're dissatisfied or you need to reevaluate things, consider that a blessing. These are all spiritual mirrors so that we can move toward our created purpose or our realized purpose. Whether that comes from outside of us or inside of us isn't a debate I care to get into. I do believe that wherever it comes from, everyone has that beautiful ideal future that they have deep in their hearts. And I love to help chip away at the marble until that statue of David can emerge.
You said so much that I want to okay, let's take the next 5 hours and talk about this. I agree with you 1,000%. And Joseph Campbell is one of my personal heroes. Also, The Power of Myth, The Hero with 1,000 Faces, The Hero's Journey, tons and tons of work all about this thing that you've been talking about, which is, you know, sort of actualizing your purpose, even though you know there are going to be obstacles that stand in your way. And we've been talking about this for thousands of years. If you go back to the Greek tragedies, that this notion of being a hero, of being the best person you can be despite the obstacles, is a lofty ideal. But it sounds to me like it's something you're trying to live every day. And I'm super grateful that you took the time to be here and to talk about it. Christian, I was wondering if someone says, you know what, I've been wanting to start a nonprofit, this is the time, how do I do it? If somebody wants to get in touch with you, what are the best ways to find you and work with you perhaps to start that nonprofit?
Thanks for asking that. Well, first of all, I really appreciate the time. This has been an amazing conversation. And yes, if anyone wants to learn more, they can find us on any social at /instant nonprofit or through a search of just the term instant nonprofit. Our website is instantnonprofit.com. But what's even cooler for your listeners is if they want a free gift of that 10-day boot camp where we explore all of the things you need to know and need to be prepared for if you want to start a nonprofit, they can go to instantnonprofit.com/Isolde and get that free 10-day boot camp. There is a video version of the bootcamp as well. They can get all kinds of other free resources, or they can schedule a strategy session with me or one of our other top staff and walk through that with a specialist. What does it take? When do they know how to start and when to start and all of those things, and just take the next step. And that step might just be learning a little bit more. So instantnonprofit.com/Isolde, and you can get to all of our social and everything from there.
That is awesome. And thank you so much for doing that. This is very wonderful of you. And heck, I want the free boot camp. I'm going to take it. So I have just one last question, and it's a silly question, but I find that it can yield some profound answers. And the question is this: if you had an airplane that could skywrite anything for the whole world to see, what would you say?
I would say it would be love yourself first. So many of us have learned to, been trained from childhood to do certain things, behave in certain ways, learn certain things, pursue certain career options, whatever it is. And there's no class, it's often missed, especially in Western modern society, to stop and just take, be appreciative of the journey. And so love yourself first is something that I just write down for myself on a post-it occasionally and stick on the mirror. And it really helps me to remember to just take a breath and take care of me. And I encourage everyone else to do that. And that's going to make everyone's day brighter, whatever it is that you have to do.
Absolutely. I love that. And it's, again, your point is well taken, because quite frankly, if your mission is to serve others, if you're not healthy, if you're not well, you'll burn out and you won't be any good to anybody else anyway. So absolutely. Well, Christian, I'm super grateful that you took the time. We're going to record a little bonus episode in a minute, but I'm really grateful that you took the time to be here to talk about this. It's important, especially right now, with how many people are thinking about starting a nonprofit or changing careers, you've left what you've been doing and now you're trying to do something else. If you're listening to this and you're kind of going, oh, that would be cool. I'd like to start a nonprofit. Christian is, I guess, here to talk with you and help you on that path if you want it, and or go to instantnonprofit.com/Isolde and get the 10-day free boot camp, which I think is so cool. That is such a wonderful gift. Christian, again, thank you so much for being here. Don't go away. We're going to record our little bonus episode that you can get if you're in the Coffee by the Water Club, where you're going to get a few more little nuggets of wisdom from Christian. Until next time, this is Isolde Trachtenberg reminding you to be bold, be creative, and most of all, be kind. Thank you so much for joining me today. I really appreciate you being here. Please subscribe to the podcast if you're new, and it would mean the world to me if you told a friend about it. Today's episode was produced by Isolde Trachtenberg and is copyright 2022. As always, please remember this is for educational and entertainment purposes only. Past performance does not guarantee future results, although we can always hope. Until next time, remember to be bold, be creative, and most of all, be kind.